It's a brand new day, and we're putting the AM in American politics. We've seen the darkness of division and despair and are now jumping into the light of a bright path forward. Progress is here, and we're sharing its story with you, for you, all with the help of Signal Boost. Now, here are your hosts, Zerlina Maxwell and Jess McIntosh.
Welcome to Signal Boost. This is Jess McIntosh. I am here with Zerlina Maxwell, and we are joined right now by Professor Janelle Wong. She is an AAPI Victory Alliance board member and professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland. It is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and we have a lot to talk about. Professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
No, we're thrilled to have this conversation. It is, of course, AAPI Heritage Month, which I think is it's going to have a different feel this year. There is an urgency to our need to engage with this community and the absolutely horrific violent racism that it is experiencing right now every day. I think folks maybe weren't aware of in previous years, but the studies are just. More Asian Americans fear that someone might threaten or physically attack them than any other race. That is a shocking statistic. And I just wanted to give you a platform to talk a little bit about what's happening and what it is we can do to help.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think, you know, there is such renewed attention. One of the things that we are experiencing is a kind of, experience that has been part of U.S. history. And so incidents of Asian American violence really didn't start now. They are definitely there's been a doubling down, I think, since especially President Trump's reference to the coronavirus as the Kung flu, as the China flu, as the China virus. But even before those remarks, I think we started to see, or we have experienced in the past, episodes of systemic violence against Asian Americans. And that really started with the entrance of Asian immigrants to the U.S. in the 1800s. We saw mass lynchings. We saw people being run out by Asian American Chinese workers being run out of Western towns by white mobs. And so this is sort of a return, I think, to this cycle of violence that Asian Americans experience when there are moments of anxiety in U.S. life. This happened when there was economic anxiety in the 1980s, and Vincent Chin, a Chinese man, was killed because he was mistaken mm-hmm. for a Japanese American, and two white auto workers killed him. And then you also see in moments where there's foreign policy concerns that especially South Asian Americans are targeted, sometimes misidentified as Muslim, and experience the kind of violence we just recently saw in Indiana, where four Sikh Americans were killed.
I feel like...
Go ahead, Z, sorry.
No, you can go ahead, because I feel like you had a follow up.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just it all goes. We talk about this on the show a lot, the sort of magical thinking that goes into American history and the history that gets yeah. taught to kids. And this is honestly, you know, I've spent my adult life trying to re-educate myself and figure out the stuff that they didn't teach me in school. This is still the first time, the first day that I have ever linked moments of great upheaval and anxiety to a rise in hate crimes against Asian Americans. And it feels like if we had that kind of education early on, that this is something that we were predisposed to do, we might be able to do more than just be horrified when we watch it. We might be able to recognize these moments as they're coming. And yet we just do not teach this stuff. And it drives me absolutely bonkers. I'm sure as a professor and as somebody who works in this community, that has to be equally frustrating, if not more, for you.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity here. So you're absolutely right that most people don't understand or haven't been exposed to these histories. And so, you know, the idea that Asian Americans were the first group that faced exclusions based explicitly on race from immigration in the U.S., and that that exclusion was grounded in the same kinds of stereotypes that we see today, that Asian Americans would bring, Asian people would bring disease to the U.S., that Asian women were going to bring sexual immorality to the U.S. These kinds of incidents have echoes today, but most people don't realize that. And so there's an opportunity for, I think, a kind of renewed attention to this more varied history in the U.S., and especially to thinking about how, you know, we can implement more information, more education, both in the K through 12 system and in higher education through ethnic studies. I mean, this can also be done through popular culture. And so there's more resources available today, even in the last month, as people have kind of scrambled to put together, you know, primers on Asian American history. And I think that does present an opportunity to kind of address these missing histories in some people's education. But there's also, I think, an opportunity to think about the Asian American experience as it is connected to that of other groups. And so Asian Americans are not the only group that's experiencing bias and even hate incidents today. So some research is showing that, you know, Latino and Black Americans and Native Americans are also experiencing a high degree of racism and especially racist violence today. So about 10% of all of these groups are reporting incidents of hate crimes and violence just in the first few months of 2021.
So one of the questions I think I've had from the beginning is, you know, as these incidents have increased over the course of the pandemic from the beginning, as soon as, you know, folks started using racist terminology for this virus that we're all trying to survive, it feels to me like we're obscuring that increase, and it often because I don't know, I just feel like even after the Georgia mass shooting, I feel like, you know, like it pops up in the headline and then it disappears, and the specific community that it, you know, has suffered continues on, you know, mourning and processing. But for some reason, I don't know what it is, like there were some reports after the Georgia shooting that it could be because of a language barrier, and that's why there weren't more reports about you know, who the victims were and all of their backgrounds and their families. But I feel like this is something that doesn't get covered in any prolonged fashion as sort of like that there is a through line that connect all of these things together in the way that we, you know, place other types of things in a sort of narrative bucket. Right. How can we fix that? Because I feel like this is the kind of, you're so, you know, it made my brain click in light bulb when I realized, like, I haven't been putting all of these historical things together and connecting them in a through line, when that would be really helpful.
Yeah, I think two things are going on. One, there's much more, you know, there has been an uptick in anti-Asian, reports of anti-Asian violence since the start of the pandemic. And so there has been more coverage, and it is linked to the pandemic. And so we can see that it's going, you know, I think as the pandemic sort of, the nature of the pandemic changes and people are getting vaccinated and there's less concern and there's more understanding that, you know, the origins of the virus may have been China, but should not be blamed on Asian people. I think that education is happening. But I think there's also, you know, this very important role for long-term research. And so what we see from studies from Pew and from my own research is that there was a fairly steady reporting of anti-Asian bias over, you know, prior to the pandemic and through the pandemic as well. And so there's both the pandemic-related violence, and then there's the kind of everyday racism that Asian Americans experience. And I think that is one thing that can, you know, is less cyclical, is these two kinds of stereotypes that are consistently part of the Asian American experience. One is the forever foreigner stereotype, and that is the one that has really, that really comes alive in times of crisis for the U.S. And that is the one where we see people, you know, asking Asian Americans where they're from, assuming that they're not from the U.S., or assuming that they don't speak English. Those are very much tied to that enduring stereotype that can sometimes lead to this real kind of acute sense of otherness among Asian Americans and being treated as others. But there's also another stereotype that is kind of much more present in a day-to-day way, in a consistent way across U.S. history, and that's that model minority stereotype. And that stereotype is very pernicious. Also, it can sometimes manifest in ways that say, oh, Asian Americans only care about, achievement in certain areas, but aren't creative, aren't good leaders. And that stereotype is even more pernicious in that it also, there's lots of research that shows that people who buy into that stereotype or who internalize it as Asian Americans actually are more anti-Black in their attitudes, because they actually start to, lift up the Asian American experience and to not think about all the structures that are in our society that that in some ways Asian Americans benefit from this, from certain kinds of biases in ways that other groups don't. And so it's just very complicated, I think, and it's important, I think, for all, you know, one way that we can kind of confront these moments of bias is to be aware of these stereotypes, their longstanding roots, and try to really reject these easy assumptions that come when, for instance, people think, oh, Asian Americans are naturally good at math and Asian Americans have a special value for education, when in fact all groups value education.
Yeah, it seems really silly that that has to be said out loud, but when you put it in language that plain. Yeah. I mean, just the phrase model minority, it's like, obviously that's being used to set up one group against another. Like it couldn't possibly be more transparent as a tactic of upholding white supremacy. Like one of you, I mean, to make the oppressed classes like fight each other is one of the strongest, most time-worn tactics of distraction, so that you're not actually talking about the oppressive structures that are keeping you in those places. What kinds of resources should people be like, what do you like, what's on your syllabus in your class? Like if you wanted to be our professor here, like what should we be reading? Like what should we be availing ourselves of that we're probably not?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that there are really good resources. Ellen Wu writes about the emergence of the model minority stereotype and exactly what you talk about, the role it plays in both, you know, how Asian Americans were, for various reasons, exactly as you say, white supremacy, they lifted it up in some ways so that they could shield themselves from the worst impulses of white supremacy, especially after, you know, the Japanese American internment, after exclusion. And what are the costs of that? It was also white Americans who, you know, their anxieties around the civil rights movement, it's exactly when the model minority stereotype emerged. And that was a way to undermine the political protests for civil rights that Asian Americans and other groups have benefited from. So that, I think, Ellen Wu's work, Also, my colleague Oyan Poon writes a lot on how these kinds of racial tensions can manifest today in fights like over affirmative action, for instance, and this idea that Asian Americans, a false idea that they face discrimination in higher education admissions. So these are pernicious ways in which ideas about Asian Americans get folded into kind of everyday thinking. And, you know, I think it really then leaves out a lot of stories about the Asian American community. The fact is that, you know, what we saw in Atlanta with those shootings is that there's a lot of economic vulnerability in the Asian American community. The reason those women were on the front lines and were vulnerable is partly because of their economic position as spa workers and their racialized experience as immigrant women as well. And so, you know, that kind of story is just not in the model minority stereotype. And yet it's a very real part of the Asian American experience. Mm.
Right. So we're sitting here now 11 minutes away from the decision by the Facebook Oversight Board, which has no actual regulatory power. They will make a recommendation and then Zuckerberg et al. Will decide whether or not to take it. This is not a legal entity. But we are now, as I've been speaking, 10 minutes away from the decision to possibly allow Donald Trump back on Facebook. So what kind of message would that send from Facebook to allow him back on, who is probably the worst perpetrator, at least the one with the biggest platform of the racist language around the COVID-19 pandemic? What kind of message does that send to allow him on here during Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month in the middle of a wave of really horrific hate crimes?
Yeah, I mean, this is a kind of, I think, dangerous moment. There's definitely research that shows that, you know, as Donald Trump started to make xenophobic remarks, started to clearly blame China for the spread of the pandemic, that other Republicans started to use that same language. And we saw Twitter, you know, research shows Twitter came alive with anti-Asian rhetoric and then implicit bias against Asian Americans. So Sean Darling Hammond and his colleagues at Berkeley have shown implicit bias against Asian Americans started to also deepen over, you know, in relation to those tweets. And so I think part of the problem is that kind of anti-Asian rhetoric or even blaming another, an Asian country leads to backlash against Asian Americans. This is a really tough problem, though, because, you know, sometimes Asian countries do engage in mm-hmm. hostile or kinds of behaviors that we would condemn. And so, you know, I think that one of the things that's important to underscore here is that it's not just about Donald Trump, that Donald Trump ignited this kind of anti-Asian sentiment in the U.S. in some ways for the current moment, but that we can see as we, you know, discussed at the beginning of this program, that these kind of underlying hostilities towards Asian Americans can be triggered through at various times and have been triggered prior to Donald Trump as well. And so I think the key here is for people to have a better understanding and to recognize that this is a special kind of experience that that applies to Asian Americans. When Russia was accused of spying and infiltrating our elections, it didn't lead to a kind of racialized backlash against people of Russian origin in the U.S. But for Asian Americans, that does happen, and it affects people way beyond the country that is being blamed. So lots of the people who are experiencing anti-Asian violence are not even Chinese, right? It's affecting other groups as well. Right. And what does that mean? That means it's a hard problem. We have to be able to criticize China for human rights violations, for instance. And we have to understand that those criticisms don't necessarily lead to backlash But it's when you start evoking this kind of yellow horde, disease-carrying, immoral, kind of foreign threat. That's when the backlash starts to happen.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning and shining a light on this. Professor Janelle Wong, she is Prof. Janelle Wong on Twitter, and I highly recommend a follow.
Yes.
Please come back. We would love to talk more. We'd love to talk about the reasons to celebrate AAPI Heritage Month, at least before the month ends at some point, too. So we'd love to have you on.
Thank you so much. Thanks for covering this issue. And thank you for covering our community.
Of course.
Please.
Of course.
Stay safe and take care of yourself as much as you possibly can.
We'll be back tomorrow with another Signal Boost podcast.
Thanks for listening.